The College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Negandhi.
Welcome to the College Football Podcast. David Pollock and Kevin Negandhi with you. Fresh off the first release of the College Football Playoff Rankings. We'll get Pollock's thoughts about that. And later in the program, how about Rhys Davis representing those Northwestern Wildcats or those Northwestern Fighting Rhys Davises. We'll get his thoughts on and how he's in the middle of this conversation with Pat Fitzgerald and Joey Galloway and how we've got shirts printed out with the family wearing them. And he pulled that shirt out that was great on TV last night to show Joey good back and forth. And what's ahead for Northwestern and plus his thoughts on the first release of the College Football Playoff Rankings. If you enjoy the podcast, you could always subscribe, rate, and review. We always appreciate the feedback. Paul, let's start with you. I know you're on the show last night, and you weighed in on a variety of topics. A day later, what sticks out to you when you saw the first release?
Well, I think it's definitely, if you want to talk about the committee, and it's going to be a tough job this year. Obviously we've discussed that, but if you haven't played anybody or if you haven't played anybody that is ranked or that is thought well of, you're not going to make much hay. You know, I think it's, and listen, by the way, this isn't new, Kevin. Like if we've been following College Football Playoff, they're huge on who you've played and they've huge on who you've beaten and beaten good teams. And I think BYU at 14 stuck out big time because they haven't beaten a good team yet, but we thought maybe the level of dominance would allow them to climb a little bit higher than 14, for goodness sake. So kudos to Coach for coming on too last night. I thought he was awesome. I thought
he was great.
How about that? Just no coach speak. You know, he was spitting it, man. And you could tell he was a little frustrated with the Pac-12 and how that situation went down, but he made it clear, bro, I ain't scared of nobody. We ain't scared of nobody. You want to fight in the parking lot, bring that crap on right now. I love that. So that was fun. But I mean, listen, we have eight teams. The cutoff's at eight, I think, that have a chance to throw their hat in the ring. And I think more pessimistic people would probably say that, you know, you got the top five or six probably that have a chance to make the College Football Playoff. But, Clemson over Ohio State with a loss showed me something too, that they're willing to, you know, they think they're better. The loss, they'll forgive a loss as well. And obviously the circumstances around that loss is a little bit different too. But so, I mean, nothing earth shattering. We're not going to figure anything out like crazy in this thing after 1 week, but I did think there were some things that were telling.
By the way, the head coach at BYU, Kalani Sitake, he talked a little bit about that, and he defended anytime, anywhere. You know, I think the narrative came out earlier in the week that BYU was ducking Washington. No, BYU was waiting for a couple of things. They were waiting on how things were going to play out on Tuesday night, but at the same time, fully aware that if another team or another game was canceled in the Pac-12, that Washington would have to go there. They would have to face another team, and they wouldn't be facing BYU.
And that happened.
And Sitake was great about it. We talked a little bit about this on Monday, and, you know, December 5th, how cool would it be? And Cincinnati wouldn't do it. Why would they do it? They're seventh right now in the rankings. But it would be great on December 5th that both Cincinnati and BYU have open dates. You think so?
Oh, it's going to happen.
Well, that would be great if so, but I
understand. But by the way, what you just said is important because BYU has a lot more to gain than Cincinnati does.
Exactly.
Like, there's no doubt about that. But I'm just telling you, I know Fickell well enough, and I've talked to people at UC. Like, he don't care. Like, Fickell's kind of an anywhere, anytime kind of guy. And, you know, he's done a great job with UC, and I think he believes in his team. And I think there's a good chance we'll get that game next week.
That would be incredible. And if people are wondering, you know, group of five, BYU isn't in the group of five. Just understand that. They need to grab an at-large. And sitting at 14, it's very hard to grab an at-large if you're trying to talk about the New Year's Six berth, right? So that plays a huge role in all of this. And meanwhile, you know, Cincinnati, when you look at it, they may have – they may have sealed the group of five already when you look at who's behind them, right? And we'll get to the Coastal Carolina conversation, but the committee wasn't impressed with Coastal Carolina. If you look at the film, they're fun to watch. We will break that down. And Jamie Chatwood and what he's done so far, I love how his offense is it's not complicated, but he has a lot of different things. It's not something you normally see on Saturdays, and we'll break that down in a moment. But I want to continue the conversation here with Notre Dame and how this stuff plays out and leading into Friday's game against North Carolina. I mean, listen, they're not a shoe-in now to get to the ACC championship game. They've got to figure out how to slow down North Carolina's offense. Now, granted, North Carolina's defense can't slow anybody down, but when you look at a matchup like this on Friday, what do you anticipate to see?
Here's the thing about Notre Dame. We've talked about them all year long, and their biggest strength is what? It's their offensive line. You got five guys up front with so much experience, five, you know, seniors that you can depend on. Blitz pickup against Clemson was a masterpiece display of like understanding and seeing what's coming. And I already know this, like I've already seen this 10 times. It's amazing. And now you're down two guys. You're down Kramer, you're down Patterson. And by the way, not to COVID, that was both to injury. So, you know, I think you take away what's best at Notre Dame. Now, listen, it's a guard and a center. And I think their best two linemen are their tackles. That's just me personally. But when you talk about communication and when you talk about this unit and how good they've been, that's a tremendous blow. And now, you know, you're playing North Carolina, who they can score points in bunches. And so I'm very curious to see this unit without, you know, without two guys up front, because it starts with the play action, or it starts with the run and then play action and then book being protected and then being able to scramble. So, you know, it's already a challenge as it is. And now throw in two new guys that don't have near the experience. I mean, both those guys had over 550 snaps already this year. So you're talking about, you know, two tremendous blows to a Notre Dame unit.
How do you view the again, we briefly touched on it, but how do you view Northwestern when you look at any of the film and what they did to Wisconsin?
No, I mean, they smashed them, bro. Like they destroyed them. They did.
Was that a surprise? I mean, listen, what we saw from Wisconsin early on. Now, granted, Wisconsin didn't play anybody if you look at their schedule in the first two games, but was that a surprise?
Yeah, and listen, I think Wisconsin being down, you know, their best two receivers impacted it more than I thought. Graham Mertz got pressured, and what happened, he became a lot more mortal than those beautiful tapes we all drew up about him and how great he did. So I think, you know, Peyton Ramsey's a stud. To me, by the way, if you have a normal quarterback that's normal for Northwestern, a guy that they've had the last 4 or 5 years, this team already has two losses, maybe three. Like, That's how big of a difference Peyton Ramsey is. You watch the way they came out in that ball game. It was pass, 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 pass. You don't do that unless you trust the guy. And by the way, you can move the pocket. Once you have a running back going one way, you move the pocket the other way, and you know, levels. And then they sprinkle in some RPOs. And so I think it's just a great formula. They're going to make you earn it. They're a really good, really, really sound defense. All their linebackers, by the way, have like combined 600 tackles together. They're just football playing Jesse's and Reese Davis playing Jesse's, and just a good solid unit. Now listen, let's not get it twisted. They're not overly explosive on offense, right? I mean, Purdue game, they didn't have an explosive play. They created a few against Wisconsin, but that's not how they make their hay. But they're still, you know, as fundamentally sound as it gets, you know, super, super talented now at the quarterback spot, and is going to make you earn everything you get.
Okay, we've got some information coming in just now as we're taping this. The American just announced that Temple's game against Cincinnati will not be played. Positive COVID-19 cases, contact tracing at both schools. The game was supposed to be played this weekend, and they both share a common open date of December 5th, but the American's return to play protocols would not allow for a sufficient number of student athletes to be available for competition on that date. So the game will not be rescheduled and will be declared a no contest. We will see how that plays out, though, with the idea of an open date on December 5th, like we just talked about, you know, Cincinnati having that December 5th open date potentially, if they were to have any enough sufficient players to be able to play and field the team. with that conversation that we just alluded to with BYU. So, you know, the cool thing about us taping this, we will have news coming in, coming out. And if we do, we will discuss it immediately and get some reaction there. But it's unfortunate and how this is going to play out, but it's the way of the world here. Who's your dude of the week here as we transition to what we normally do on Wednesdays?
So I went down this rabbit hole last night because I knew we were going to do this, and I was looking at guys, and there's a guy from Tulsa named Zaven Collins, who not only will you hear about it right now, but you'll hear about it in the draft, you know, early in the draft. I think he'll be a first round, second round type pick. He's the one who sealed the game last week with a 96-yard pick six, but he had 15 tackles. But I went and looked at him, and I watched the USF game, and then I watched the SMU game. He's 6'4", 260. And when I look at him, I'm like, yeah, he's 220, 230, right? Like, he's put together, but he's not a freak. But you look at it, and he's listed at 260, and you're like, holy cow. And you see it most when he makes open field tackles. When 260 grabs a hold of you, you go down. You know, like 210 grabs you without that extra 50 pounds of mass, I break some tackles, right? Like, I can go through an arm tackle. That dude clamps on you and you go down. And then watching him in coverage and stuff too was awesome. He's got four picks this year. He's got two pick sixes. Reads QB's eyes really, really. Ended the SMU game with a pick to seal it. So, dude, Zaven Collins is an animal. He's a dude, and he'll be a dude you hear drafted early in the NFL draft too.
Yeah, Tulsa is one of those teams, like, each and every week, man. Phillip Montgomery, got to give him a ton of credit. They hang in every game, and they win some wild ones, as we have seen as the season continues. Like, I go back to that game against Oklahoma State and Stillwater. That second half, if they could have generated any offense, and that's a credit to Oklahoma State's defense, but man, if they did a great job in that opener on the road. Let's go to the Coastal Carolina conversation here, because I'm really glad you studied film here of Jamie Chadwell's offense. And, you know, when you watch them, and they've got a really good quarterback, 18 touchdowns, one pick so far this season. They've got a really good backfield that's talented. A year ago, they beat Kansas, and it's the program's first ever win over a Power 5. But this year, when you watch them, and that game against Appalachian State, they showed me something this weekend where it was like, all right, how are they going to handle this? How are they going to handle adversity? What are they going to do? And they were never taken by the moment, right? Because Appalachian State has dominated. They've dominated the series. They've been the story in the Sun Belt. And Coastal Carolina made a strong impression on me. And I think Chadwell's going to be a hot name in coaching circles. When you watch the film as a defensive guy, what are you seeing from this offense?
This is the most fun offense to watch in all of college football. And it's not close to me. There's so many strange, not even strange, there's just so many wrinkles and so many things that they do that it's ridiculous. I mean, they run so much stuff to make you look at, and for all different forms of the triple option. So, you know, Paul Johnson's triple option, but most of the stuff, you know, it's unbalanced. It's jet motion. You know, you've got option wheel routes where you're, it looks like the triple option, and then they're running the wheel routes. You got split zones, you got traps, you got midlines. It's last week they ran against Coastal for a touchdown. They ran a quarterback draw RPO. Like, it's ridiculous. He literally drops back or comes up for a second, runs, and then they run the running back straight up the seam. The linebacker has no shot, but they give you a little bit of everything, man. And it's super fun. They put everybody in conflict. They make you think about it, and it's always motion. It's always unbalanced. It's just, it's super cool, man. If I was a guy needing an offensive coordinator, that would be one of my first calls to go get a guy. And I think it's Willie Korn, who's the co-offensive coordinator, and I think one of the ones that calls the plays. But it's the coolest thing I've seen in college football. It's the most difficult offense, I think, in college football to defend schematically.
What do you think of Grayson McCall when you watch the quarterback?
Well, first of all, he's another guy that you don't realize, Kev. You say he's, you know, 18 to one, but he's 6'3", 200 pounds. So he can run the football. He's a freak of an athlete, man. I mean, he's a really good athlete. He can run it. He can throw it. you know, they don't have to ask him to run it 25 times a game, but I'm not surprised last week he carried it, you know, 14 times and needed to, and can create that big play like he did in the game against him. So really good athlete, can throw the football. Listen, it's a hard, I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's the best passer in all of college football, but the offense and what they ask him to do is so unique and so different. But he's, you know, when he's not in there, it's a little bit different. But remember, he got banged up and it's still, this ship still rides. Like this car still flies. So the offense has been great regardless. But I think when you put him in there with his, you know, big size and ability to run and such a good athlete, I think it's a hard offense to stop.
I was really happy for Coastal Carolina to get a showcase kind of game on ESPN, obviously with Clemson and Florida State being postponed. And then we had to adjust the networks when it came to what games are going to be played where. And then we saw Coastal Carolina in that fantastic window there at noon. Now they got Texas State. They're 8-0. That game on ESPN Plus. And Texas State's getting ready for their 12th game. We're seeing some schools play one game, like at Utah. Texas State, game number 12. So they come in with the experience. If you can get the chance to watch them, 3 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN Plus, I'd try to find Coastal Carolina while you can. And it'll be interesting to see how they are going to be matched up in the postseason, with a bowl game. And I'm not sure a team would want to play, Jamie Chadwell's offense and because it's a short prep time, right? Because we won't know bowl stuff, and usually that selection gives you three weeks or at least 15 practices or 10 practices beforehand. We're not going to get that. Good luck preparing for Coastal Carolina if you're playing them in the postseason. Is there a game you've got circled when it comes to a matchup?
Yeah, I think Maryland and Indiana. I love this game. I think this has got a chance to be, you know, Indiana obviously in a bad spot with you know, coming straight off of Ohio State. But I do think that if you watch that game, you're like, Indiana, if they played Ohio State again, I think not only could hang, I think could possibly beat them. Like, Indiana shot themselves in the foot repeatedly and didn't take advantage of so many opportunities. And then Maryland, I think is really, really good. We've talked about on the pod already how much I love Tagovailoa and this offense. And, you know, Funk running the ball. And I just think they got some – they got Cross playing defense in the secondary, who I think is really, really good at safety. And I think this is going to be a barn burner of a game. It's at 12 p.m. I wonder if, you know, there's a hangover from Indiana. I think there should be some confidence gained as well. But, you know, this is a lot of straight weeks in a row for Indiana. Maryland coming in, you know, kind of fresh, obviously, after games getting canceled. But Indiana's had – they've had a grind, man. I mean, you think about Penn State and – Rutgers and Michigan State and Ohio State. They've had a pretty good schedule up until this point. Wisconsin coming up in the future. I think this could be a trap game for Indiana.
Now, I don't think Tom Allen and all that stuff lines up, but I don't think Tom Allen will allow something like that. I'd be surprised, right? Considering he's got the pulse of this team. It seems like every button he's pressed, the team has responded, especially in that second half when you're down 35-7, right? Like, I was really impressed by what Indiana showed, I think, the country in the second half on the road at Columbus when it's time for them to pack it in. Here's another team. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I could make a tape on what not to do and how not to play defensive Ohio State in that second half versus Indiana. I mean, my God. Like, I was literally screaming at my iPad while I was watching it last night.
You were yelling at Ohio State's defense. Is that what you're telling me?
Oh, my God. Like, a clinic tape on how they're free safety in the middle of the field, jumping crossers ad nauseum. And, you know, I don't understand them and what they're trying to accomplish. Like, when you go up big, right? Like, what do teams do, Kevin? They have a tendency to throw the football, right?
Yes. I mean, just that's the only option right there.
Okay. Coming back. So even people that didn't play football or that don't know a lot about football know that the fastest way to score is to throw the football consistently. Like, okay, so when I'm playing defense, Kevin, I get in nickel. I get in dime. I play pass. I put more speed on the field. Ohio State just sits there in base and plays 4-3. Like, late in the game, they switched up when they needed stops and got stops. But I'm just going, what are you doing? Like, this makes no sense to me. I was very frustrated as a defensive guy watching that tape, especially in the second half.
Okay, let's get to another topic here that hits home with you, especially when reading some of your tweets over the weekend and then where they showed up last night in the rankings. Boy, it felt like the committee was like, hey, man, if JT Daniels is the quarterback, this is a different team. For Georgia to be ranked number 9, I was surprised. I think a lot of people were kind of surprised with 2 losses. But the way that offense looked, they couldn't run the football. Okay, we know that. They couldn't run the football on Saturday.
Do you know why?
Tell me why.
Okay, and this is, if you watch Mississippi State all year long, go watch the LSU game to start the season. Go watch any game with Mississippi State. They run a 3-3-5 defense. It's very, very unique in what they do. So when you run a 3-3-5, Kevin, the staples of offensive line, just to be like super simple, they basically want to double team and move up to the next level. Okay, that's what offensive line, they want to find guys, double team, go up to the next level and get the next, you know, get the linebacker and get the next guy. In a 3-3-5 and in that defense, you never know who's coming. Linebackers are blitzing all over the place. They're plugging holes. They stunt and move up front. It's a very hard defense to identify. And in turn, it's a very hard defense to run on. Contrary to that, though, the other side, the flip side of that is it's very easy to block and pass protection. It's very simple to pass protect, keep it very – now, listen, they'll get you on some blitzes too, but they got Georgia. Don't act like Georgia was perfect. But, you know, it's very easy to pass off pass blocking assignments as opposed to pass off running assignments. And so – but – good God. I mean, JT Daniel, I didn't expect that, homie, at all. Like, I've seen JT Daniel play, and I've never seen that version of JT Daniel. That was insane. From a guy that hasn't really trusted his knee and, you know, hasn't felt confident enough to really be on the field and want to be on the field, to a guy that looked like this game is easy. I mean, it was an unbelievable turn that I was completely shocked by.
So shocked that you went to Twitter to Taylor Schwenk, our producer's dismay. You're not a tweeter. And then you tweeted this. What on earth is going on with Georgia? Now their quarterback, JT Daniel, can't miss. And they can't run the ball worth a flip. Can't never have 2 things at the same time. Peanut butter, no jelly. Burger, no bun. Kool-Aid, no sugar. That's really good, because I would never have jelly. I don't think you'd ever have a bun. I don't think you'd ever have sugar. So you would have the first 3 things, a peanut butter and a burger and Kool-Aid. As a result.
True story.
Yeah, exactly. just help me understand. And JT Daniel wasn't playing early in the season because he was dealing with the knee issues. And I think there was a lot of question marks like, wow, how serious is this? When are we going to see him? Help me understand, what does this do?
Really quick to that, Kevin, to that point.
Yeah.
You got to remember what happened to JT Daniel this offseason. When he decided to transfer, JT Daniel didn't have a home for a while.
Yep.
And so JT Daniels, when the world shut down, you know, he wasn't rehab. Like, remember, when you're at Georgia or you're at USC, like, you go to treatment every day. Offseason, during the season, you go to treatment every day for 3 or 4 hours. They massage, they put you in those, especially with an ACL, they put you in the movable little knee brace thing that literally moves your knee and it teaches it to move again. And you go through the ice tubs and all that stuff every day for hours and build strength. He didn't have that for months. So it kind of set him back a good amount, as opposed to where normally you're seeing guys with ACLs like Rodgers last year for Clemson. My God, he was back in 5 months, you know, and looked like a freak. So it was a different situation from that. So he wasn't healthy and he didn't trust his knee, obviously, and it wasn't strong enough for him to compete for a while.
Help me understand, what does this first impression in this offense mean for Georgia in the next couple of games, and also big picture wise?
You know, it's interesting. When you said the committee, the way you phrased it, it's interesting, because you said, you know, the committee apparently liked what Georgia did.
Yeah.
And so if that's the case, homie, and they're at 9 and maybe some chaos happens and they keep just putting the pedal to the metal and, you know, look good against South Carolina and Vanderbilt. I never considered them in. I don't consider them a team that I would even remotely put in the college football playoff from what I've seen. So when you said that, it was kind of like, wait a minute, do I need to rethink that? I don't think they're in, but I do think if I'm a Georgia fan, now I get to see some really cool things that might lead to what the future. Like when you look at their offense and you've been frustrated, like Burton, number seven, is a true freshman. He looks like he's a freak, and Jermaine shows you glimpses all the time. And when JT Daniels comes in the game, he goes for 200 yards. Mm-hmm. You know, like it you got Pickens, who all of a sudden comes back alive. So I think down the road, Georgia next season, we might not now have to start this conversation of who's playing quarterback. Now, listen, they had Jamie Newman, he opted out, all that good stuff. But you know, I think JT Daniels, if you're a Georgia fan, he gives you so much hope for next year, and you want to see him with Munkin get comfortable in the system and watch him continue to progress. Because I was just the poise. I was blown away. Dude hadn't played in forever. And hey, he's just calm and cool. David,
that ball was popping off his hand too. He was slinging that everywhere, and there was fire on it. It looked pretty cool.
And by the way, I will be the first to tell you I was wrong, because when I went this summer and watched him and Jamie Newman throw, when I first heard about JT Daniels, I said, that's another Jake Fromm coming to Georgia. And then when those two dudes went out and threw, Jamie throws the ball, that thing whistles when it comes out.
Yes.
And JT Daniels throw that thing, and it's stronger. And I was like, holy cow. Like, that dude's got a rocket. But the accuracy, the movement ability, even though he is more of a statue, he moved exceptionally well in the pocket, and a free rusher would come and he spun out, and Pickens rollout touchdown pass where he threw it to him. I mean, just some pinpoint accuracy. I bet Todd Monken was like, Hallelujah. Oh, yeah. My God, this is so much fun to play like NFL style football and throw passes.
Brother, there's also a cockiness and a moxie he brings where he's just like, I already know that I could put this ball anywhere. Now, that could work against you, but JT Daniels comes in with a certain arrogance, which is a good arrogance when you want a star quarterback playing in the SEC against good defenses, right? Hey, I've got this. And
you know, confidence based on fact is not arrogance.
No, 100%. But I'm saying it can come off as arrogance. It's supreme confidence in his skill set, and arrogance isn't, like, when I use that word here, it's not being applied as in a bad way. It's coming in saying, I know I'm the man. Trust me. Just watch.
And most important thing he did. The most important thing he did was shave his mustache, because that was the ugliest mustache I've ever seen in my life. You know, it's interesting. And you can shut me up, and I can if I need to shut up, just tell me. But like, here's what people don't understand about confidence, arrogance. Like, people with elite mindsets, people with great mindsets, it's never a lot of time. Aaron Rodgers is one of the most confident, in quotation marks, human beings I've ever met. Like, he's got more of that than I've ever met in anybody. But you know what it translates in? It translates into being great. You know, like LeBron James, confidence. Like, mindset has so much to do with how you play. When you think you're the best, and when you think you can make plays, you don't worry about, you don't have the fear. The fear is removed. You just go play. Kevin, I was a cocky, maybe, by the way, still am, an arrogant dude. Like, I'm very confident in who I am, and a lot of times to my detriment. When I mess up, Kevin, when I messed up in football, when I went against Jonathan Ogden for the Baltimore Ravens, who's a Hall of Famer, or Willie Roaf in the NFL, when they blocked me, I did something wrong. Like, I missed with my hands. Like, I should have caught those hands. Like, I did a bad job. Oh, he jump set me. I should have been ready, and I should have countered. I never once ever looked at anything of what I did as being somebody ever being better than me. And I think it's one of the most underrated things about sports is having something in your chest that tells you, like, I got this, I can do this, and having that confidence. So yeah. He showed that, man, which is a great thing. There's nothing negative about that whatsoever.
And that drives you to get better and better. And that's why you want those type of people in the big moments. And then later on, years later, you can reflect back and say, no, Jonathan Ogden is just a different kind of human being. And he's a Hall of Famer. No matter what I was going to do that day, he was going to whoop me.
No, I still don't feel that way. Absolutely not.
Come on. It's Jonathan Ogden, man.
That's great. He's Jonathan Ogden. That doesn't mean I can't beat him. Like, I just, and again, that's a different mindset. It's a different thought process. But yeah, it's definitely, you're gonna win some, you're gonna lose some. But the mindset component is huge.
I love it.
Ogden got lucky.
Yeah.
By the way.
Hey, you bring that cockiness and you bring that arrogance here on the podcast, and we love it. And that's why sometimes we've got to remind you that sometimes when you make predictions and comments, they can come back to you. Taylor, you want to roll the clip?
I think it's over for Bama. I think if you're just talking about winning a national title, I don't think they can win a national title without him. It stinks, and I hate it for him. And I think that Bama just went from a team that I think could win a championship, and you lose a guy like that, that caliber, I don't think you can win a championship without him.
So that was our boy.
I'm sorry. Did Bama win a championship? Did I miss something?
Wait. I wanted to give our audience some context. That was our boy a few weeks ago after Jalen Waddle got hurt. And now you weren't on the podcast on Monday, so I'm being completely fair. I'm not putting any, you know, anybody's words into my mouth and spitting them out. This is what Herbie said on Monday, so then you get the opportunity to respond. Go ahead, Taylor.
Well, I'm hoping, since I won't be with you on the podcast later this week, that you're able to remind David Pollack that he said Alabama was, the word he used was done, emphatic, done, D-O-N-E, was what he said. And I'm going to make sure I remind him of that on Saturday.
So it is Wednesday, and obviously you have a few days.
I
want to get your first response.
They beat the crud out of Kentucky with 25 people, you know, on COVID and not playing in the game. Congratulations, you deserve a trophy. It ain't over, bro. Like, who cares? The regular season means nothing for Alabama. It means absolutely nothing. So, listen, this quote is not looking good. From an expert opinion, it's not looking really, really good, okay? But they ain't won nothing yet. They ain't won a championship. So,
and with that in mind, on a serious note, with that in mind, they've got the Iron Bowl with Auburn this weekend. They've got Arkansas after that. And then you said it from the beginning that it wasn't about the regular season. This was about you talking about the next level as teams prepare, elite teams prepare. They play for what's in front of us, but also what's going to be ahead of us, right? And that is in the playoff conversation. That was where you said it's over for them when it comes to the playoff. Has that changed at all when you look at this offense and you look at the way they're humming and you look at all the playmakers stepping up and Devontae Smith going next level, even better now, filling that void? Does it change your perspective when you look at the prospect of a semifinal game against one of the top five teams and a national championship?
Yeah, it does. I mean, they're playing. I tell you what, man, Mac Jones, like, it's just ridiculous. I mean, it's insane to watch him. He's on point. He's ridiculous. And his pocket presence is ridiculous. And just, he had some good moments a year ago, but not like this. Mm-hmm. And by the way, we've talked about this on the pod, so I'm not going to belabor the point, but it's a completely different offense. It's not the same offense it was a year ago at all. But just the way they've morphed this offense and the way it's become play action and the way they take shots and the way they stack receivers and continue to evolve offensively it's a thing of beauty. Now, the other side of the coin, by the way, to me is, you know, that was also fresh off of, you know, not too far removed from watching Ole Miss destroy them. The biggest thing to me is their defense is coming on now. And there's, you know, Malachi Moore, by the way, who's a freshman who was inserted in the lineup right away, starting to play good football, starting to play really good football at that star position for Bama. So I think, you know, it's interesting. I think their defense is grown, and they haven't played juggernauts. I know. I get it, bro. But Mississippi State can throw the football and can play decent. They held them to zero. You know, Kentucky doesn't have an offensive pulse either. So I think it's hard to judge, you know, those two, but I do think their defense is also getting better, but big test this week with Auburn. This week will be a huge test because, you know, listen, Auburn's 4-2 now, by the way, which is kind of crazy to think about, and in the top 25. And Bo Nix is playing the best football I've ever seen him play. So can they pressure him? By the way, I don't know what it is, and I can't explain it. And Kevin, I can't give you any opinion and figure it out. But Gus Malzahn somehow has Nick's number a little bit, okay? And I don't know I don't know how the heck that happens. And I want to use a swear word for God's sakes, because in no world are these two coaches comparable. But offensively, they always do a great job against Bama, even when their defenses were elite. So it's just, it's very strange, but this game seems to be competitive. But Auburn stopping Alabama will be a challenge. But I'm not even worried about that side of the football. I'm going to keep focusing on that defense, because the defense has really improved for Alabama. And if that continues to happen, obviously, you know, the championship, you know, could come back to Tuscaloosa again.
I miss the environment that we're going to get usually the Iron Bowl in Tuscaloosa or on the plains. And yeah, that's the one thing I think about, you know, not a packed house, because nothing better, you know, 3:30 kick, you know, on a weekend like this, and it's the Iron Bowl between these two teams. And again, the cliche, throw out the records. It's true. Throw out the records, because you know you're just going to be entertained regardless of what's going to happen with the outcome. So can't wait. I'm curious to see if Bo Nix can have a clean game, and that is no turnovers in a game like this. If he can, then I think Auburn will be in the contest. All right, ready. Let's go for our picks here. And let's remind the audience here that you had a substantial lead as I continue to cut in. And now you're plus 15. I'm at plus 7. I picked up a game last week on you.
So I'm more than double you still? Is that what you're saying?
I'm going week by week. I'm not going, you know, I don't look at the scoreboard. I look at the drive. So right now we're in the drive in the third quarter. And I've been playing really well in the second half.
But you got to start throwing the ball, and I'll play dime, baby. I'm not dumb, okay?
Okay, I'll take some of the chunks, man. I will take some of the chunks, all right? And if that means taking plus one over the upset specials, I don't mind doing that. I will get closer to you as the season continues. We'll see how this goes. Because when you look at some of these games, oh, man. Let's start with Friday, because I think Friday's two games are pretty good. And that is Iowa State at Texas. And right now, Texas is favored, depending on the line, 1.5. Who you got in this one?
Iowa State.
Sounds like it could be your upset special too, right? You got the underdogs.
I feel very good about Iowa State. Like you just talked about, no crowds. So obviously that stadium isn't near as imposing, but I don't trust Texas. I trust Iowa State, exactly who they are, what they are. But it's kind of crazy that Texas, by the way, is in a position now where they can still be in the Big 12 championship game with possibly Oklahoma, which is nuts. But I'll take the Cyclones.
I'm with you. And son of a gun, I was hoping that you were going to take some of that Texas Kool-Aid. But
do you ever listen to me?
No, I do. I know you're at Iowa State. Kool-Aid. And, you know, I've given Breece Hall a ton of love because he deserves it. He was actually one of our primetime performers on ABC.
He's an absolute freak. He's unbelievable. Fantastic.
He deserves all the attention. All right. How about this? Notre Dame laying 5 at North Carolina. And these are straight up games, by the way, for our audience.
Yeah, you go. You're first.
I'm going with Notre Dame. I got to go with Notre Dame for one reason. And I love Mac, and I love Sam Howell. I think they could score. I just don't think that defense could stop anybody right now. And I mean, they gave up 53 points to Wake Forest. So with that reason only, I will go with Notre Dame. But I think Sam Howell will be scoring some points.
Wake Forest is a really good offense. Mm-hmm. To let you know.
No, yeah, and a very unique offense. I agree.
And by the way, this
gives you a just different type of players. I mean,
yes, correct. By the way, if I'm South Carolina, I would hire Dave Clawson in a heartbeat. If I can't get Hugh Freeze, I would hire Dave Clawson. Never been in the top 10 in the ACC in recruiting. Their offense since 2017 has been only behind Clemson, second in the ACC. So a guy that can take less talented players. It has a weird style, a different style of offense that is unique, that's very tough to prepare for, that people don't run. I don't know. I think it's a good fit for any team that's a decent – listen, he won at Bowling Green. He'll win everywhere. If I was somebody that's looking for a coach that I want an offensive team, I would go with Dave Clawson.
I think you nailed it.
But I'll take Notre Dame, by the way.
Yeah, and Clawson, I think Clawson would be fantastic. He knows that region as well immediately, right?
Yeah.
And he will grind games. He'll grind you out. And right now, that's what South Carolina has to do. They've got to grind people out. All right, let's this is a good one. Who would have thought, right? Penn State at Michigan. Michigan favored by 2.5. Who you got?
I got Michigan. When I look at these two teams, first of all, it hurts my eyes. They're 0-5 and 2-3, and Michigan just went to, I don't know if you watched, but triple overtime with Rutgers.
Oh, I stayed up and made sure I didn't leave the building because that game was thrilling.
By the way, could you say should have lost? Because Rutgers has to do is make a short field goal and they win. But here's why I'll take Michigan. I don't think Michigan's great, but I do think Cade McNamara is the guy. I think he has a little something extra to him. And I think Haskins being the main focal point at running back. Last week, he got a career high 23 carries. I think those two give their offense more. And listen, Penn State's offense is a nonprofit. Okay. They're going to donate the football to you consistently, even if you are Michigan. So, and you don't do well defensively. So I'll take Michigan.
That's a good line right there. I like how you use that in there. Well done by you. I'm with you. Penn State's offense and the inconsistency at quarterback as they try to figure things out. McNamara, again, they move the football. They move the football, and they had some juice, and they looked alive when he came out on the field, and they got a gift there with some of the play calling by Rutgers in overtime, because to anticipate that your kicker was going to make it, foolish right there. All right, Kansas State, Baylor, and Baylor's favored by 5.5 points, a Baylor team that's 1-5, Kansas State 4-4. Kansas State coming off that really ugly game where they were blanked 45-0 against Iowa State. And I'm going with Kansas State in this one. Just everything's weird about it. I know Vegas is telling me you're a fool, but I'm going Kansas State.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Vegas. I think you're a fool too. I'll take Baylor. I don't listen. They know something we don't know. And usually they're right, Kevin. Like, I don't know how. I don't know why. It's going to be a good game. We know that. But Kansas State is obviously really struggling to score points. I mean, offensively, it's not good. I mean, the highest they've scored in the last three games is 18 points. Okay? So it's not pretty. I'll take Baylor.
Yeah, speaking of not pretty, these games, oh gosh, these are some bad games. All right, Louisville at Boston College. I think what BC on this line I'm looking at is laying 1. And, all the conversation right now with Scott Satterfield is, his name being tossed around for the South Carolina job. And he issued a statement, of course, his loyalty to Louisville. Who you got in this one?
I got BC. I trust BC at this point. Louisville, listen, they have great moments, bro. And Hawkins will look like a dynamic running back, and Cunningham will look like a dynamic quarterback. And golly, they turn the football over. And so I don't trust Louisville. Listen, Boston College, I know they're 5-4, but I kind of trust this team. You know, I don't think they're great by any stretch of the imagination, but I trust them. And I mean, if you think about who they lost to, they lost to North Carolina, Clemson, they lost to Notre Dame. I mean, those are pretty good football teams, homie. Those aren't bad. So I'll take Boston College, and I trust Jerkovic more.
Yeah, I'm with you because Jerkovic it's weird. You said it best there. While they have 4 losses, I trust Boston College against a lot of teams.
Yeah,
I really do. That just shows you what Halfley's done. I think they've done a really, really good job at that program. Stanford at Cal. That is a Friday night game. And you could tell I am digging here to find some close matchups.
Good Lord.
Yes. So who you got, Stanford and Cal?
You're first. Go.
Oh, boy. I'm going to go with Stanford.
Okay, I'll go Cal.
And I can't really tell you why. I'm going to go with Stanford in a game like that. I mean, that Colorado game was pretty good, 35-32 loss, but I will go with Stanford. You're going with Cal.
I'll go with Cal because I don't have a clue either, by the way, but I just –
You're adversarial to me, right?
Correct. I mean, it makes it more fun.
Yeah, I agree. It makes it more fun because this is kind of where we're at. And do we want to go USC, Colorado, or do we just already know what's going on? I mean, is it just we're both picking USC?
I can tell you this with full certainty. My super dog for Saturday's game day, Colorado right now is by far in the lead.
Oh,
I am thinking that for the super dog. Remember, you get kind of points. By the way, Liberty hosed me in my super dog last week on game day. I take the outright lead from coach if they make a field goal. And they get the field goal blocked on the last. Anyways, but no, I think Colorado obviously hasn't played a bunch, but when they have played, man, I mean, give me some Broussard. I love that kid. He totes the rock hard, and they've gotten out to good leads, by the way. But they've struggled to close games. But that's my early lean. I mean, listen, part of it has to do with USC. I don't trust them either, but. If you're asking me to pick, I would pick USC.
Yeah, if it's a close game, the way USC's played, I will take USC considering what they've done in games, right? In the final 4 minutes, it's just a switch comes on. But Carl Durrell, props to him and what he's done. He's done a real – that is a tough, tough situation to come in during COVID. And then you got to, you know, figure out this team and make sure no one transfers out or they stick around. Like, just – a ton of credit for them to win their first two games. So is your underdog pick going to be Iowa State?
Yes.
Man, I've got to make some ground on you. And
I feel really confident in that pick too.
Yeah, so do I.
Really good about it.
You know what? We're just going to dump down on these screens, man. You give me the prevent. I'm just going to go with Iowa State as well. I'm just going to.
And this is why you're a loser, Kevin. This is why you're Indiana. You're never going to come back because you're not going to take chances. It's not going to work, bud. It's not going
to
work.
You know what you're trying to do, Taylor? He's trying to goat me into making a foolish decision while he picks up a +2 on me.
You ain't got a curse on me, bro. But listen, dude, the bottom line is you need some points, okay? I'm just trying to help you in the direction of you need points. So taking the same pick as me doesn't make a whole lot of sense, Kevin.
It doesn't.
You know what? You do you, buddy. Go out there and have a ball, bud.
But you know what? These games are so bad. Like, when you're looking at them, and none of these games, you know, when – oh, man. I'm going to have to come back around and take a look at this schedule here and pick a game.
This is called show prep, ladies and gentlemen.
This is called? This is called having all your three kids stay at home today, and your wife went into work, and now you're just trying to figure everything out. You're scrambling, and you're just jumping in. That's what it means, and I didn't get the chance to look at the scores, all right? So easy. Oh, you know what? Okay. So,
why wouldn't you go Stanford?
My upset's going to be Stanford. That's where I'm going to go. All right. I'll take the 1.5 and Stanford as we play this way. All right, buddy.
Okay. I would have taken Colorado State if I were you, but just remember that in the back of your mind.
What's the line there, Colorado State?
5.5 Air Force.
Ooh. That's okay. Because if I did, then I'd hear it from you that I needed your help and all that. That's just not worth the headache. So.
Okay.
Hey, listen, be good tomorrow. Have fun Thanksgiving wise. My best to the family. And as you eat at the kiddie table and probably have your own set of food that's different from everybody else's.
Will do, Omar G. Have a Thanksgiving.
And it's great to have College Game Day host Reese Davis with us, who has joined us on the podcast before, and I wanted to get him on right after the first rankings with the release coming Tuesday night as we tape this on Wednesday. But he's found new fame, and not the type of fame that he was clamoring for. It just came to him, of course, with Joey Galloway a week ago, just having some fun on the show on Tuesday nights, and then Northwestern football, making this a theme and then showing out on Saturday against Wisconsin at home. So the Fighting Reese Davises of Northwestern football, they are rolling now. And it's great to have the mascot join us here. Reese, let's get into this because I thought the shirt was great last night that you showed Joey. I saw the kids wearing them. What's it been like for you the last few days?
I've been sort of bemused by it, and nothing really annoyed me other than you just called me a mascot. That's more annoying than anything that that Joey Galloway did. But, but no, it's been fun. Honestly, Kevin, and I've told this story a couple of times, when I was traveling back because with COVID and everything, I haven't been staying for games like I typically do. So I came back and I've been keeping up with that game. And by the time I got here, you know, saw the end and everything. And I heard Pat say it. I hadn't even heard Pat say it. Rob Lemley, our producer, sent me the tape. And I was like, well, what's he talking about? And I thought, well, he must be talking about when we had had a conversation on the Top 25 show the week before. He said, hey, as long as, you know, we're talking to you, we're in good shape. We're still in it. And so I thought it must be that. And then I heard, you know, then he mentioned Galloway as I listened for the tape. And then the kids started yelling. I was like, oh, yeah, I'd forgotten all about it. You know, like many things that Joey says, just in one ear and out the other. And, it's been fun. And, I Zoom bombed them and in their team meeting on, or as I like to call it now, our team meeting on Monday morning. And I got Ernest Brown the fourth squared away, who, like you, he also hurt my feelings by saying that it hurt his feelings to be compared to me. So I told him, I said, Ernest, it hurts my feelings that it hurt your feelings. I said, so the only way we can square this away is by you guys winning the Big Ten championship. If you do that, we'll call it even. So it's been kind of crazy. I'm also annoyed that someone is making money off these T-shirts and hoodies, and I'm not getting a cut. So I'll have to look into the legal aspects there. But
well, seriously, that's something you should. Weird. You need royalties for this.
I do need royalties for this. I need something for my pain and suffering.
Well, Northwestern keeps surprising us, and obviously I thought their footage that they rolled out during the week, and I think it came out yesterday, where guys at practice were calling each other Reese Davises and, hey, Reese, good catch, Reese. I thought that was that was really a great play into leading up to the game. And then afterwards, you know, with that, was that going out and being played out with an interview with Molly McGrath, and the guys coming off the field talking to each other, hearing your name the whole time. I thought that was pretty cool. And the school's embracing it. And again, listen, it's 2020. We're in a pandemic. It's nice to have college football, and it's nice to have fun. And that's just the one refreshing thing about this conversation. I thought Pat is handling it well. Let's just have fun with this and move forward. Right.
No doubt. And Pat and I talked on Sunday, and, you know, look, you know, Pat's a great person, as you know, but I don't think he goes around worrying about whether, you know, broadcasters have their feelings hurt, which I did not. But, you know, I do think that he was at least wanting, you know, to make sure that, you know, that I wasn't terribly insulted by this whole thing. So, you know, he called me, and it was all good. It was fun. You know, if things like that, you know, Kevin, from playing ball growing up, things like that happens on teams. I remember one year, one of my son's high school teams, they, for some inexplicable reason, they all started calling each other Steve. There was not really any Steve. They just decided that, you know, Steve was the kind of guy who would get picked off second base, you know, without even making a dive back, you know, stuff like that, you know. And teams do stuff, and it pulls them together, and it creates a bond. And they jumped on this, and it was funny, and all those guys have a great sense of humor about it. And, you know, Galloway, for his part, we were talking after the Top 25 show last night, just talking about the show. He goes, I want to know something, Reese. Why didn't they release that video before the Wisconsin game? He said, that practice was before the Wisconsin game. And I said, Joey, I said, after the Wisconsin game, when they won, it's funny. Before the game, if they release it and they don't win, well, you know, it looks kind of bad. I said, so, you know, they wanted to be funny.
It's part of the game, right? It's the buildup, and then you hold that video, right. And then when you release it, then you look great, right? Exactly.
Then you're lovable guys. You're lighthearted. You're a really good team, by the way. For all of this, lost in all of this is that they're good, and it's been really impressive to watch the turnaround, because I think it's one of the most difficult things to do. I do have a theory that it might be easier some places than others to weather a really bad season. And I think Northwestern would be one of those places. And last year was that. But nevertheless, it is really hard to do. And they turned from being woeful last year to being a problem this year, particularly on defense.
Yeah, and it's a typical Pat Fitzgerald team, and they've got a quarterback that can make a couple of plays, and we saw with Peyton Ramsey in that game, where once they got the lead, then they're going to grind you out, right? They're going to make you pay that they've got a lead, and good luck. And I thought that when you could do that against a Wisconsin team, and now, granted, Wisconsin was down two wide receivers, but when you could do that against a Wisconsin team, it shows that, listen, we're in this for the long haul, and this is not just one game. This is not an anomaly. We are going to be here in the West, and we'll see how that plays out. The firepower they're going to have to develop if they want to counter potentially down the road in facing Ohio State. We'll see how that plays out in a few weeks. But you play a role, and for our audience, and one of the reasons why I wanted to bring you on the day after the first rankings is you play the role of the quarterback here, and you're here to bring opinions out. You know, you filter some of your opinions and you weigh in if you believe in something. And then you were strong on, hey, the committee watches games. But last night, the audience is there to hear what the analysts say. And your job is to, I know where we're going. I know how we're going to do it. I'm also going to make sure that we're going in a direction that is understandable. We're not droning on here as I'm droning on in this lead up to the question. I want to get you on the podcast because I want your opinions about what you saw with the first rankings, especially, you know, how it plays out with Clemson ahead of Ohio State, the Texas-Florida conversation, and you know, BYU at 14.
Okay, well, as far as Clemson and Ohio State, I think they're just ahead of the curve, because if Clemson beats Notre Dame and you know, wins the rest of its games, beats Notre Dame, gets in the playoff, they're almost certainly going to be ahead of Ohio State because of their, you know, it's a balance this year. It is important to watch the games and exercise football judgment, but I think that's a reasonable thing to expect, that Clemson is going to look good from a football judgment standpoint, and their resume is going to be better than Ohio State. So I think with a more significant win, they'll probably be ahead of them anyway. So I'm not too bothered about that. And it'll probably mean that they play each other anyway, because that would probably drop Notre Dame. I think the question would be, would Notre Dame fall behind Ohio State or not? I suspect they probably would, depending on how the game goes. And that's going to be a big thing in an ACC championship game. And I'm making the big assumption that Notre Dame does not lose to North Carolina Friday, which is very possible with the firepower that Mack Brown's team has. But, you know, if it is a competitive, if it's a highly competitive field goal game, you know, then I think that, and Clemson wins, then Notre Dame is, you know, might fall behind Ohio State for no other reason. They'll try to avoid having to play a third time in the semifinals. If they play again, it would have to be in the championship game. So, you know, that didn't bother me too much, even though I have it the other way in my AP poll. I have Ohio State ahead. I'm not in as much despair over the Ohio State defense as some are. They're certainly not as good as they were last year, but, you know, they had an all-time wrecking crew last year that, you know, just came up a little short against a really good team. The BYU thing I understand but don't agree with. I think BYU is much better than 14. The one thing I would caution, I'm going to call my guys out on, I didn't think last night was the time, so I'm waiting on it. All this stuff about, you know, just watch them, I don't care who they play. Well, then I don't want to hear anything else about the double directional school games in November and September next year, if that's your take, you know. But if it's your take that this is a one-time exemption, you know, I'll allow it, as the judge says. But otherwise, don't come to me next year with, well, they played, you know, double directional technical school in week 11 before they played the rivalry. I don't care. You said that, you know, you want to see how they play. And so that would be the only thing I would say about that. That said, I don't agree with BYU being that low. I think I've got BYU just falling this week behind Cincinnati, because I was so impressed with what Cincinnati did against a UCF team that I think is really good. They've lost three games. They found a way to lose all their close games. But I think they're still good, and it was an impressive win. The way they, you know, they took apart Cincinnati and BYU didn't. Took apart Houston, I should say, and BYU finished them off at the end. Little things like that. But I still have I have BYU ranked much higher than the committee does.
And then Cincinnati with the news we talked about earlier on the podcast with Pollock, their game against Temple this weekend has been canceled, declared a no contest due to the COVID cases and contact tracing surrounding both programs. So when you look at potentially their schedule, they've a tough game because Tulsa's been tough all season, and every one of their games is buckle up because you're going to be wildly entertained and there's going to be a wild finish. That game's at Tulsa. With them sitting at 7 there, is there any shot here? Because when you look at some of these teams in the top part, it feels like we will have elimination games, right, on the 19th?
Yeah.
It feels like we are going to see, you know, the SEC teams – you know, declaring themselves, one of them is going to stand out, whether it's Alabama or Florida. Then it's Clemson, Notre Dame, if everything goes as planned. And then, you know, Ohio State, Northwestern. And those three spots look like they could be determined there. And then Cincinnati sits around and says, oh, what about me? Don't forget about how do they play a role here in this conversation in your mind?
I don't think their situation is out of reach, and I don't think it is much different than it was prior to the rankings, Kevin. The problem they would have would be if Florida beats Alabama. That's the biggest problem. A secondary problem would be Clemson beating Notre Dame in a close game. The combination of those two things almost certainly would eliminate them, as it would eliminate one of the teams we're talking about. Probably assuming that, you know, Ohio State probably, but potentially Northwestern goes undefeated. What Cincinnati really needs is for Alabama to eliminate Florida, and for Notre Dame to eliminate Clemson. And if Notre Dame were to lose to North Carolina, then that would certainly help them as well, because in all likelihood, a second loss, would knock them out of the mix. I'm not getting intel from the committee on this. This is just my judgment on it. I think an undefeated Cincinnati team, as long as it wasn't fluky and they continue to look as good as they have looked so far, I think they would pass A&M. If A&M had lost to Alabama by 8 instead of 28, then maybe we're singing a different tune. But I think Cincinnati can hop A&M if they're undefeated and they look good. If there's a spot, and in my judgment, there would be a spot if there's only one really viable option from the SEC, ACC, Big Ten that would leave a spot, and I think Cincinnati has a chance to get it. I don't know that it's a likelihood, but I think they've got a chance, and I'm not sure there's anything on their schedule. Obviously, when you see where BYU is ranked, adding BYU would not necessarily help them, only pose a risk to them. They need to look good, and they need to look the part, so that when the people in that room evaluate the tape, that they look the part and they say, hey, you know what? They navigated everything. They've beaten some solid teams. They throttled some solid teams. So we're going to put them in that fourth spot. But I do think their nightmare scenario is Clemson beating Notre Dame in another epic showdown, Florida beating Alabama in a great game, you know, coming right down to the end. And then there's no spot for them, because then you'd have the winners, you know, you'd have Florida and Clemson, you'd have Ohio State, and then you'd have to choose between Notre Dame and Alabama.
And finally, in this conversation, when it comes to the rankings, how do you view the Pac-12 when it comes to Oregon and USC? Just three games under their belt. And if you go by, well, we haven't seen them enough. Well, Ohio State's played 4 games and they're in the top 4. So how do you view SC and Oregon moving forward, as they've got 3 games each on their schedule, and cautiously optimistic they play all 3 games?
Yeah, I just don't see the path, Kevin, and it's unfortunate for them. I think Oregon's got a really good team. I think USC has shown some toughness and resilience. They're very fortunate to be undefeated. It doesn't mean, you know, they were close enough to be able to pull those games out, which that counts, and that counts for something. I think their problem is that they haven't been up to this point as dominant. I think it would have served Oregon well to really hammer UCLA, but it's also asking a lot because they started so late and everything's, you know, everything's so up in the air. I just don't know that there is enough of an opportunity to impress for either of those two teams to get into the four. And, you know, so you're looking at, you know, best case scenario, 7-0 teams against nothing that the committee has deemed, you know, a victory over a highly ranked team. Alabama's already 7-0, and they've got two wins over teams that the committee says are in the top nine. You know, Clemson would have that as well if they were to knock off Notre Dame, and Notre Dame has a victory over number three. So, you know, it's I think it's really the deck was stacked against the Pac-12 a little bit when they decided to start so late, no room for you know, for cancellations or to get a number of games in. So they had to really be impressive, I think, from the start and the close games for those two teams. While you get all the credit in the world and deserve praise for winning them, if you're trying to vault yourself with a very small sample size into the top four, I just don't see how it could happen.
Now, RD wearing many hats here, of course, because right when football season is over, he rolls right into the college basketball season. And coincidentally, the season is underway as we begin this conversation. Abilene Christian, East Tennessee State tipping off. And that's a good thing. I'm not sure where we will be in March when it comes to how many games are played. But before I let you go, I wanted to get your thoughts on your anticipation to the college basketball season. It feels like we would be best served if we go with the mindset that if we play 15 to 18 games, it's a win, I think, overall for every program heading into March Madness. Would you agree? How do you view this basketball season?
Yeah, pretty much the same way. I think I looked at it the same way I did in the summer looking at football, that I'm cautiously optimistic that it can be done. And up to this point, I think we've done a pretty good job. You know, I guess I use the royal we there, which is obnoxious, but I think that college football has done a pretty good job in getting this done. And I know people could react and say, but what about all these cancellations and it's chaos and medical staffs can't agree in Tallahassee, so they don't play. Everyone should have realized that there would be disruption, and all of the leaders emphasized that there almost certainly would be. But I think when those disruptions became fewer and fewer kind of after the first few weeks, that we thought, okay, you know, this is going to go along smoothly from here on out, and sort of forgetting that this is what most people anticipated and tried to build for in the first place. So I agree with you that getting some of the games in, as many as we can, is a good thing, not only for our entertainment and our business, it's good for the players. I've brought this up on several occasions. We haven't had opportunity to do a deep dive into it. But in speaking to athletic directors around the country, and I'm not just talking football here, that their mental health issues have been up because of what we are asking of these young men and women in terms of quarantine and disruptions to their life and the isolation and you know, they're not really spending time, you know, in class or Zoom class. I know from having two college age kids, they hate the Zoom classes, but it's necessary. And it's, you know, it's something right now. We're asking a lot of them for a group that, and I understand the spread aspect, but the reason that you see Notre Dame students congregating storming fields because they need something to celebrate. They want something to celebrate. They haven't been allowed to be around people and, you know, as often as they would like. And they think, but I'm not, you know, nobody's getting sick. You know, I understand there's a bigger picture, but I'm only bringing this up to say that this plays a role in the mental health of the athletes across sports. And or the powers that be are asking a lot of them, and that should not be underestimated. I'm not saying they shouldn't have asked, nor am I saying that the athletes didn't have the choice as to whether they wanted to opt out. They certainly did. And I understand all of that. That doesn't diminish the fact that it is a lot on them, and we should understand that a little bit. So because of that, I think it's important that the college basketball season be played in some form. I think it's good for everybody, taking as many precautions as we can, trying to do everything in the program's power to make sure that the players don't get sick, and more importantly, that they don't spread it to vulnerable people. All of those things are really, really important, but they can be accomplished. And I think that we're seeing that to a large degree, it is being accomplished in college football and can be in college basketball as well.
Yeah, well said. And the options are nothing at all, or hey, just trying to figure it out and go in a fluid situation and each and every day, let's just see what happens. And so far, so good as we talk about the college football season and dealing with it, and fingers crossed over the next 4 months with the health and safety of the college basketball players, both men and women, and other programs too, trying to play winter sports or spring sports moving forward. RD, I want to wish you and the family a great holiday, safe and secure, and good luck against Michigan State this weekend.
Yeah, thanks a lot. We're ready to go. We're locked in on the task at hand. Great victory on Saturday, but we're moving forward. Because as Pat Fitzgerald said in the post game to our ball club afterwards, he goes, we're a bunch of badass Reese Davises. To which I replied, that's the only kind that there is.
That, you know what? That should be that phrase should be on the back of any sweatshirt that's sold.
I hope the funny thing, and I'll leave you with this, I don't want to take any podcast time, but I had a little fun on Twitter on Sunday. I posted pictures of I'm fortunate enough to get to hand out the trophy. And so a picture of with Trevor Lawrence, a picture with Tua, a picture with Joe Burrow at the trophy ceremony. And said, hey, it's a compliment because winning follows me around or something like that. It was clearly a joke.
Yes.
And, or at least I thought it was clearly a somewhat self-deprecating joke. But, some folks on Twitter just, they don't look at jokes that way.
So, no. So unfortunately, right?
I am joking for those who might know it is a joke, So
yeah. Anyway. Why have fun, man? Like some
why
of those people. Just come on, man. Just move on, and we will laugh with you as we this continues. And more than anything else, it was a great story and some good stuff that we can make light of in a very serious situation where we are in the pandemic. And have fun, man, and always love that you can join us. We'll bring you back, of course, before the playoff.
All right, Kevin. Sounds good, bud. Have a happy Thanksgiving.
Special thanks to Reese Davis, of course, for joining us, and David Pollack, always on a Wednesday. Plenty of good stuff. We try to do a deep dive on a variety of subjects as well as get you ready for the weekend and our initial reaction to the playoff rankings. It is Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving. I hope that you guys have a safe and healthy and happy Thanksgiving, whether it's with family, whether it's through Zoom with your family. Just hope Thursday's a good day, and can't wait for football on Friday. We've got so many good topics to talk about Friday and Saturday. And big thanks to Taylor Schwenk on the other side for always holding the podcast down and getting us that sound there with Herbie and getting Pollock's reaction. He was a good sport with that. Until then, if you want more football, please stay safe, wear a mask, social distance, and we'll talk to you on Monday. We'll